Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
In issues of racism, there are going to be some who will say, why don't you stick to preaching gospel?
The social, political, and economic concerns have increasingly encroached upon the minds of those who should know better.
The real transformative work in a nation is the transformative work of the gospel.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Little ponies. That's right, I just called you a pony. This is Wretched Radio. If you haven't been following, you can't help it. If you haven't been following the story of the conversion of Kanye West, chances are you haven't paid your internet bill. Otherwise, you are bound to see something about a very famous celebrity making a profession of faith. And don't we praise God for that? Yes, we do. We are very glad that he's making a profession of faith. We are very glad when anybody makes a profession of faith in Jesus Christ. But that doesn't mean that we don't need to practice some restraint when it comes to elevating somebody in an authoritative role to speak on behalf of the faith, nor does it mean that evangelicals need Kanye West to be a spokesperson on our behalf so that we can win a popularity contest. We are the Church of Jesus Christ, not of Latter-day Saints, and we are not interested in participating in the paparazzi that the world seems to think is the only sort of sect of our society that's really cool and acceptable. Okay, maybe athletes too. Okay, if you're also confused about your gender, that's considered cool too. Otherwise, we don't need to participate in any of those realms. We're the Church. We don't need to demonstrate that we are cool to anybody, because the reality is we're not cool. The reality is we're different than the rest of the world. And whilst I realize there would be an awful lot of influence that somebody like Kanye West could have, might I just encourage at this time we spend more time praying for the fellow than perhaps putting him on display and dare I say, using him as a trophy for the evangelical cause? Now, I happen to know that making a comment like that could get somebody into hot water. Justin Peters! But isn't that what our Bible teaches? That new believers ought not to be put into roles of leadership for their own good and for the safety of the testimony of the church. Make no mistake about it. We want everybody to be saved. I don't care if it's Karen, if it's Carl, or Kanye. Thrilled to pieces that anybody makes a profession of faith. But that doesn't mean wisdom shouldn't be employed. Why do I say that again? Well, not so I can receive lots of nasty emails like apparently Justin Peters did for suggesting that it's wonderful that he's making a profession, but we ought to exercise some caution. I've been receiving all kinds of stories and links to people that are putting Kanye on display, having religious conversations, and engaging him or engaging his name in those conversations. And it just appears to me increasingly, as you can only imagine, it ain't going to be easy for Kanye. He is under a microscope. Let me share with you one example and why we should simply be praying for this fellow. We should rejoice as much as we would rejoice for anybody that God would save a sinner and utilize him as he sees fit. I can't imagine. See, I was thinking that Kanye's struggles would be things like family dynamics. And I think that's true, isn't it? I think his career course and trajectory, he's got people who have got people who have got people speaking into his life, telling him what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say. You can only imagine that pressure. Furthermore, he's being discipled. I believe that he claims to be a believer now for about a year or less. He should be getting discipleship. That's outstanding. But I didn't anticipate pressures like this, and I will confess to you, even as I share some of this with you from the Daily Beast, I don't understand all of it. But that's maybe to my point, that this fellow is up against stuff. For what this is worth, headline from the Daily Beast, Kanye West's Gospel of Black Self-Hatred and White Acceptance. As I understand this, because Kanye is black, he hates himself, and he wants to be accepted by white people. In other words, race is another issue that he has to deal with. Is there anything we can learn from this article? I think so. Quote, from Kanye West, this is how the story begins in the Daily Beast. The most racist thing a person can tell me is that I'm supposed to choose something based on my race. You can argue with that statement or not. That's simply how the article begins. That could be he's taking a shot at identity politics as opposed to deciding individually. It's more of a groupthink notion. Here's the beginning of the article now. That was Kanye West explaining to Big Boy, who is apparently some internet fellow who was interviewing him, why he resented commentary suggesting his 2018 pro-Trump antics were off-putting considering Donald Trump's history of racism. Do you recall the headline? Kanye West's Gospel of Black Self-Hatred and White Acceptance. See, I thought this was going to be about his profession of faith in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the first sentence has to do with Donald Trump. What might we learn from this? I've said this before, and this is not intended to state anything political. This is to state something Christian. When you invoke our current president, you need to know that suddenly the conversation shifts from focusing on Jesus and him being the stumbling block to a politician being a stumbling block. I did not say anything about for whom to vote. I didn't say anything about his policies. I'm just saying that the man makes people enraged, and that's what this article demonstrates. It has more to do with Donald Trump, racism, and less to do with Jesus is king. To the article. It's long past time for the public to depart from his church, Kanye's church. West's persona has shifted from simply controversial to something more disturbing and damning. Under the shroud of religiosity and standard Kanye West hubris, he's become the Pied Piper of something more insidious, self-hatred. Can you imagine now that coming at this fellow? He's wholly enamored and obsessed with white approval. This fellow who wrote this article tries to make that case. I have to confess to you, I didn't exactly follow the rationale or reasoning. I don't desire to. All I know is that this man who's making a profession of faith is now being blasted from all sides, not just his religion, his politics, and now his skin color. Back to the article. As the country continues to wrestle with race, and it is, West represents an anti-black mindset that galvanizes both politics and culture. As more young people parrot the president and his rhetoric, and mouthpieces like Candace Owens continue to book high-profile engagements. Do you hear the mingling of confusion here with politics and race and religion? I am not suggesting we don't talk about any of those realms. I'm simply encouraging us to be aware that when we do, one segment, one of these issues, religion, politics, race, one of them is heard less than the others. All I'm saying. At some point, writes the Daily Beast author, we have to decide if he's worth listening to anymore. He can say these things because he knows he doesn't need the community that made him anymore. He knows that there is an audience and a president that loves having him on their side. that most of them don't look like he is actually a boon to him. He knows where his bread is now being buttered. He knows who his bosses are. Wow. I can only imagine. Don't know how much of this the fellow sees, but I can't imagine he doesn't see or hear any of it. We are in a very strange time in our country, and my encouragement as we watch Kanye West, be praying for the guy, be thoughtful about how much we elevate him or even endorse him. There is a parable of four soils, and time is really important. Let's see. Let's give it time. Let's hope that he's saved, and let's just pray that God will use him any way that he chooses. But let us also learn that this fellow is under pressure politically and racially. And those two realms are so charged. We simply need to learn the lesson that I'm sure Kanye is experiencing right now. If you want to talk about Jesus and politics and race, you have entered into dicey waters indeed. We have one agenda: Jesus the King. This is Wretched Radio. When you sponsor a Tomorrow Club for $30 per month in Eastern Europe, you are writing stories like this.
Vova and Maxim, one is 11 and another 13, they're brothers. Both of them smoke like crazy, so when they joined Tomorrow Club, they would just make noise and kick other kids around. That winter, the father left the whole family without wood for the furnace, so they could freeze to death, and without food. So the leaders came and actually brought the wood to the family and fixed the things that they were broken in the home. So the boys saw what happened. They got saved, and the change in their attitude and behavior is just immense.
$30 per month, you'll be discipling 30 Eastern European kids in far-flung and very poor villages in Eastern Europe, and so much more. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
What are some of the best partnerships you will have in your entire life? Marriage? Business? Wrong. The best partnership you will ever have is becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. Because when you're a gospel partner, you help Wretched reach the lost with the gospel. Without your consistent financial support, Wretched couldn't do what we do. Things like distribute 1 million copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple? Or say, film a new show, call it Road Trip to Truth, and get John Fabares to be the host. If you're already supporting Wretched, we are extremely grateful. Thank you very much. If you're not supporting Wretched, would you please consider giving a tax-deductible gift to Wretched on a monthly basis? Because the more our gospel partners give, the more we are able to give away. Visit wretched.org/donate to become a gospel partner and help us reach those in need of the gospel. Because we may not be the best partnership you'll ever have, but we come pretty close.
Well, Geneva was married, but in her 20s, she had a one-year-old daughter at home that would interfere with her plans to go back to school, and so she was hoping she wasn't pregnant, but she was. I asked her how she felt about her pregnancy. She said, I don't want it, and my husband doesn't want it. She agreed to do an ultrasound, and she didn't want to take any pictures of the ultrasound, but she did look at it for a long time. And so we put it in the file, and then we started walking out of the clinic with her, and she turns to the nurse, and she says, do you have any referrals for medical providers? And I said, yeah, we've got a good doctor. You can go see him. Well, she went to him and she chose life.
Ultrasounds save lives. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org, providing free ultrasounds and presenting the gospel to moms and dads? $28 per ultrasound. How many could you support each month? Please support Preborn at preborn.org/wretched.
SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
Know your reformers. Jan Hus, a Czech priest, was inspired by the writings of John Wycliffe to preach against papal excess and false doctrines such as transubstantiation. Even as he was burned at the stake by the Catholic Church, he continued to preach the gospel and sing the Psalms. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Yeah, baby. Hot. Oh, yeah. Oh, looking good. Yep, that one will Instagram right there.
What you doing, Todd Lee?
Put your toys down. It's time to do radio now.
I am doing something good for me. Do you mind?
Oh, self-care, is that it?
Something like that. This is Wretched Radio. Don't know if you heard, narcissism can be good for you. New research has found. Was that right? We can research that, can we? I did not know that vanity can actually be studied scientifically. But apparently, according to new research led by Queen's University Belfast. Okay, Belfast.
Northern Ireland.
Was reading about Northern Ireland. Sorry to distract myself, but
it's what we do.
Can't help it. That there was some sneaky legislation where people didn't get to vote on it, and there was, in other words, it's becoming pro-choice there in Northern Ireland. I saw a stand-up routine from George Carlin. I was going through I'll be honest with you. I don't know, but I was on my phone. And somehow I ended up in this place where you just push it up. I believe the term is swipe. You just swipe it up, and it's just another video and another video. Saw a lot of soldiers coming home. That's always nice. Allergies. Saw a lot of dogs getting rescued. That was cool. And then for some reason, George Carlin popped up. I don't know why, but he was talking about abortion. So here was his thinking. Are you ready for this brilliant monologue? Oh, just you're going to get it anyway.
I know.
The brilliant thinking was, if what is in the womb, if a fetus is a human being, then why aren't they counted in the census? See, that's what I just did right there. And why don't we have their birthday start at conception if that's when life really begins? And then he dropped a bunch of F-bombs, and I was out of there. It's regardless of when culture identifies birth date. Typically, we've considered the birth date because it's when they're outside of the womb, no more, no less. And what we know is that at conception, it is fully human, regardless of what the government says is your birth date. It is a totipotent human being, honestly. And even the crowd was sort of like, "Yeah, that's good. That's good." How much did we pay for these tickets? Yeah, that was good. Yeah. That was really good, right?
Yeah,
there.
I tried to watch his seminal 7 Words You Can't Say, which I guess he stole from. Who was the guy in the 50s?
Wow.
Lenny Bruce.
Yeah, Lenny Bruce. He pretty much stole the whole thing from Lenny Bruce. But that seminal, groundbreaking performance starts with about 10 minutes literally of just fart noises.
That's terrific.
He was a mind for the ages.
The worst part is he could be funny.
But
he just went to the lowest common denominator too quick all the time.
It is not that difficult to write funny material without potty words. It just isn't. It just requires better delivery, better timing, and wordsmithing a little bit more. It just is not that. And don't we see that? There are some funny people that do stand-up without being vulgar. I mean, in Christianity, everybody loves Tim Hawkins, Jeff Allen. There's another one. Brian Regan, who's not a professing believer, I think he's a professing Roman Catholic. Funny, I think he'll on occasion use a word. It does not need to be the case, especially for Christian comics. That's a big no-no. New research at the University of Belfast, published in the journals Personality and Individual Differences and European Psychiatry, telling us narcissism is good. Taking a picture of yourself, promoting the you inside of you, it's actually helpful. They go through some machinations with studies. They never know if it's the cart or the horse that comes first. Regardless, how do we know if narcissism is good? Well, historically, the word has been somewhat of a pejorative, that it's not good to be a lover of self. But the only way that we know that is not through a laboratory, not through a study in Belfast, but with an objective source of truth. The Bible tells us narcissism, bad. Repeated twice in the book of Romans, chapter 12. You're esteeming yourself. Esteem others. Philippians 2, esteem others as better than yourself. See others as better than you. You are the chief of sinners. And what should cause us to feel that way about ourselves? It's a high view of God, a recognition of our lowness that should cause us to go, promoting me? Don't think so. The only one I want to promote is Jesus, because he saved a wretch like me. But this is the world again. Lying, lying, lying. This weekend, I will have a chance at Crabapple First Baptist Church. It's in Crabapple. How providential is that? Right there. You want sovereignty? There it is right there. Crabapple First Baptist, located in Crabapple. The world lies. Going to be talking about that, especially Saturday night, how we are peddled lies all the time. Okay, this is tragic to the core. Did I mention I was swiping through the thing? I was waiting. I had some free time. Okay, I'm swiping through the Dealey Bob, and they were just videos that apparently just get posted or are popular. Ashton Kutcher popped up at the Teen Award, and the title caught my attention because it was like three life lessons. And I thought, well, let's see what Ashton can teach us. The only reason that I was intrigued was I caught him for about 20 seconds once on Shark Tank. I thought, based on his persona, he was kind of a knucklehead. Well, he might be a good actor because he sure was playing smart. I don't mind telling you. He did not sound foolish. And I didn't watch the whole thing, but I got into one of his pieces of advice. Don't worry about externals. Worry about being smart and worry about being kind. Because all the rest of it is nonsense. But he did say something fascinating, you know, like a blind knife that bumps into a squirrel in a shed twice a day in the drawer. He said, they're just always trying to peddle you. They're trying to sell you. They're trying to tell you what's important. He goes, don't buy it. And his anecdote was, be smart and be kind. Well, he's got some of that right, doesn't he? The world is constantly bombarding us with messages. The world, flesh, devil, conspiring. The three of them are flesh. It isn't redeemed yet. It is just, we're justified, but we've got this old sinful carcass that we drag around that still can have bad desires inside of it. And the devil conspires with the world system to get it to do what it still desires to do. How that works beyond that, I don't know. But it sure seems that the devil loves to use advertising and marketing to tell us what's important. Clothing, hairstyle, fame, Instagram followers, and Ashton Kutcher recognized it's lies. Don't believe it. And then we're supposed to believe him, which is kind of funny. I've got the microphone. Don't believe what the world is peddling you. Believe what I'm peddling you. Now, he has no authority, but the Bible does. Nevertheless, he was right. The devil uses outer beauty as supremely important. Fame, fortune, those are the things. And the more I think about this, hoofda, do we buy them? Here's something that I would challenge you to ponder. Where do we get the notion that bosses are more important than employees. Where does that come from? It's not the Bible. I'm certain of it. It's not the Bible. In fact, in the book of James, chapter... It's in the book of James 4, I think it starts. The rich, well, maybe it's chapter 5. Let's find out together, shall we? We see something just the opposite from God. A rich guy walks into your assembly, and you treat him well. And God says, what are you doing? Those aren't the people that I've really chosen to go about the business of proclaiming my good news. In other words, showing favoritism. Here it is, chapter 5. Come now, you rich, you weep and mourn. The wages of the laborers, you've been really bad. Why? Somebody walks into your assembly, and you praise, you give them the best seat in the house. But the poor guy comes in, and what do? You snub him. You're doing it all wrong, because God does not see the rich and go, ah, there's the spanky one. God doesn't see the CEO and go, now that person's more important. Ah, there's the whatever the role is that we esteem as being super cool in our culture. That notion of preeminence or superiority, it does not come from the Bible. He's hardly impressed with somebody who's a CEO. It's nothing. It's just nothing to him. Money? A big building? It's just nothing to him. What is he more interested in? The insides, not the externals, not the job description, but how you go about doing your job no matter what it is. To quote Ashton Kutcher and the Bible, do not let the world that hurt lie to you. This is Wretched Radio.
Sometimes simple is best. The Mission Ball is simply a soccer ball covered with biblical text, a thorough law and gospel presentation, and an effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim Christ. With your support, the Mission Ball can get into the hands of more lost and dying souls. Go to themissionball.org. That's themissionball.org. This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verkennis. Where to begin? How about Florida? An atheist group says plans to put an In God We Trust decal on the back of new police cars in Brevard County is an inappropriate injection of religion into public life. Annie Laurie Gaylor of Freedom From Religion Foundation warned in an October 28th letter to Sheriff Wayne Ivey that the decals amount to an unconstitutional endorsement of religion, saying statements about a God have no place on government-owned cars and public officials should not use their government position and government property to promote their religious views. And yet, In God We Trust is the national motto, as well as the motto of the state of Florida. It's also on our money and is displayed in many courtrooms and government buildings across the country, including the U.S. Capitol. On its website, though, the Freedom From Religion folks call the national motto controversial. Of course they do. Brevard County Commissioner Kurt Smith told Florida Today he feels very strongly the sheriff should be able to place the decals on Brevard County vehicles, and Sheriff Ivey said federal courts have held that there is, quote, absolutely nothing wrong with the usage of the In God We Trust motto in this context. CBN News first broke a story last week that the Trump administration is proposing a move that would allow faith-based adoption and foster care providers to receive federal money without compromising their beliefs on traditional marriage. A senior White House official confirmed with CBN that Health and Human Services would be introducing new federal rules detailing that faith-based groups only need to adhere to non-discrimination provisions passed by Congress, not any previous agency regulations. Back in 2016, the Obama administration had added several sexual orientation languages to the HHS rule, forcing faith-based groups to choose between their biblical beliefs on marriage or receiving federal money to serve their communities. Since the new rule would apply to only laws passed by Congress, faith-based groups would have to comply with the three main federal laws on equality: the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act, and the Equal Credit Opportunity Act. All of them protect citizens against religious discrimination, but none of them mention sexual orientation. In the days before President Obama left office, HHS added the controversial regulation with language covering sexual orientation. The Trump administration rule would make that regulation null and void.
And I'm late to this one, but I want to share it anyway for the three of you that haven't seen it. A viral video from Maryland of an 8-year-old named Jackson Champagne, who came upon a candy bowl that was empty while he was out trick-or-treating. Young Jackson says, oh no, and then proceeds to dip into his own stash of candy to restock the bowl so kids that come after him would have something to take. The video was taken by the homeowner's Nest camera. 15 million views and 500,000 shares so far. More Wretched Radio straight ahead. I'm Tony Verkennis.
Mexican. The Incarnation is one of the greatest miracles recorded in the Bible. At the Incarnation, the eternal God became a human being. He did not abandon his deity, nor did he put on a human shell like a hand puts on a puppet. Jesus Christ is 100% human and 100% God, the only acceptable sacrifice for the forgiveness of sins. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Like I said, James chapter 2. This is Wretched Radio. Look, James chapter 5 had something in there about the rich and the poor. So I wasn't entirely off, just sort of. And don't forget, chapters and verses weren't even in the Bible till the 16th century. So don't blame me for not having pay no attention to the man behind the microphone. This is Wretched Radio, James chapter 2. My brethren, do not hold the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ with partiality. For if there should come into your assembly a man with gold rings, fine apparel, and there should also come in a poor man in filthy clothes, and you pay attention to the one wearing the fine clothes, and say to him, you, sit here in a good place, and then say to the poor man, you stand there, sit at my footstool. Have you not shown partiality among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? God doesn't do that. God providentially places people in the environment at the social structure he wants them in so that he can do the work that he has prepared for them to step into. But God is not knocked out by famous people. God doesn't take snaps and paparazzi pictures of the latest cool celebrity. It doesn't impress him. And it shouldn't impress us either. God sees different things than we do. He values different things than we do, and we perpetually let the world persuade us, oh, that would be the coolest. Oh, if only I were. Ooh, look at that person. God doesn't look at it that way. His scale is radically different than ours. He is interested in internals. Those are the things that knock him out, if you will. Don't let the world lie to you about these things. Now, having said that, providentially, no kidding, just stumbled across an article. I'd read this, I think, years ago, and I literally just found it in a stack on my desk. Because remember, you're listening to one of the most organized radio programs on this station at this time, Wretched Radio. It's from Byron Yawn, the new asceticism and investment bankers. He's writing a warning to us. Hey, be careful that you don't get nasty toward rich people either. You shouldn't elevate them, put them on a stool like, ooh, they're the highest, they're the best ones here. I don't know why you'd put them on a stool anyway. It's very dangerous. Don't do that. But on the other hand, we don't want to be like, oh, you're a rich person. Oh, what does this title have to do with that? The new asceticism and investment bankers. We have a tendency in our current culture, there's a trend. I don't know if it's still going on or not, but downsizing, less attachments, more living, less complications, more stuff that I get to do. I don't want to be tied down, tethered down with a house and a yard, subjecting nature so that we can enjoy this planet and live as image bearers. That's kind of, doing stuff, taking pictures of it and putting on the Instagram. That's the important stuff. There can be a trend for us to whiplash in the opposite direction of not esteeming celebrities and the wealthy and the famous to despising them. Doesn't God want people on Wall Street to get saved too? Doesn't he want rich people to get saved as well as poor people? We're not to show partiality in these matters. And so Byron Yon, talking about this trend of asceticism and maybe some confusion in our balance, he writes, affluence is now a veritable, unpardonable sin. I'm afraid we may be understanding the gospel in all of this. If we assume the disadvantaged in our inner cities or third world countries need the gospel more desperately than the privileged on their boundaries, then we have. It denies man's real need and judges by externals only. God wants depraved sinners to be saved, whether they are wearing a fine suit and tie or they're running around in a loincloth. Doesn't matter. God wants people saved. And so if somebody gets saved who is in that upper echelon and they have access to other people in that upper echelon that you and I wouldn't have access to, isn't it good that they hear the gospel too? What if a man wearing a tie entered your church alongside a man in rags, writes Byron? Honestly, who would you assume needed the gospel more? To whom would your heart go out? Now, let's be careful here. Our heart can still go out to somebody who's really having a tough time. We should, our heart, because it's like, whoa, life is hard. But that isn't his point here. Our instinct here is evidence of our failure to maintain gospel fidelity. Our hearts should go out to both when it comes to salvation. Not weeping over the businessman in the same way you do the poor man is an insult to the gospel. We need new lenses, don't we? We just got to admit, we have purchased what the world tells us is important, haven't we? Wouldn't it be great if that person got saved? Why is it greater that Kanye gets saved than Christine in Kalamazoo? It's not greater. Now, might somebody like Kanye have a greater impact? Sure, they might. God still is not impressed by that. God has that person in the place where he wants them to do the works that he's prepared for them. But that doesn't mean that we should be fawning. And it doesn't mean that we should be flattering. And it doesn't mean that we should be disdainful toward either. So we just whiplash, don't we? The poor people really need to get saved, but then somebody famous gets saved and we go gaga. Byron Yon encouraging us, watch your balance. The upper middle classes of the suburbs still need the gospel, desperately, in fact. So who's going to reach the affluent with the gospel? Who's going to bravely venture out into the wilderness of capitalism and reach those who have been trapped by its power? Who's going to trek into religiously dense suburbs and assume the worst among the people who look the best? That's a good word. They don't look like they need to be saved. They've got two new cars in a three-car garage with lots of stuff. The church still needs successful businessmen and wealthy executives who can infiltrate the upper echelons of the corporate world with the good news of Christ, and investment bankers who can speak deliverance into the context of greed. We still need salesmen whose business trips look more like missions trips. The church still needs missional soccer moms. The church still needs rich evangelists. You ever see those people and you wonder how they're going to get saved? I'm not going to get a hold of them. I can't find these people. You got them in your Rolodex? Anybody in the Fortune 500 world? I have a friend who does. And it's his job to work with these people. Brilliant brain, this guy. But apparently not too brilliant because he's friends with me. He talks to these people as part of his job. And he sees them as a mission field. And God has been blessing it because he uses his accent, his access to reach these people who need the gospel just as much as the people in Boingo Boingo. And that should encourage you, by the way, if you think that you don't have a glamorous assignment, define glamorous. What's a glamorous gig? It's the world that makes those distinctions. It's the world that says, okay, here, for instance, it would be the world that would say that radio and TV ministry more important than the local pastor in Boise, Idaho. That is wrong. That's just not the way that God sees it at all. That's the way the world sees it. We have received messages from the world system since birth. It is in our pores. I will ask you again, what Bible verse says that people who are famous are more important in the eyes of the Lord? You can't find that. Hey, stay-at-home mom, what verse says that being a, quote, career woman is more important? You're not going to find it in the Bible. In fact, I'd make an argument just the opposite. Well, who is telling you that it's not important? Who is screaming at you? Really? You stay home all the time? And to add injury to insult, while he goes to work? It is a worldly definition that is being peddled to you as to what is important. Got to reject those lies. You just got to reject them. And look at what the Lord says that he esteems. It's not the jewelry. It's not the fancy hair. It's not the career. It's the inner beauty. That is what he seeks from you. If you're feeling blue, kind of depressed, maybe feeling like, oh, my life is a waste, don't listen to the applause of the world. Listen to what God esteems. That'll pull you right out of your funk. This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for joining us. Always appreciate when you choose to spend part of your day with us here at Wretched Radio. We always love to hear your questions, comments, conundrums, and snarks, and your wretched stories. Two ways to get a hold of us: leave us a voice message at Beep Talk, 1-877-282-BEEP, or to share your story, you can email idea@wretched.org. This one that said, "Hi, Wretched, I'd like to personally say how much of a blessing this organization has been towards myself and towards others I know who are in Christ. I'm rather young, but it is my hope that through faithful and trustworthy renderings of Scripture, as organizations like yours has, and of course through careful study of God's Word, I will grow. Are you able to partner with us to make more emails like that possible? Go to wretched.org/donate for all the details on how you can become a Wretched monthly gospel partner. If you're able, please consider it today. wretched.org/donate. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Tempted, but I'm not gonna do it.
Some churches in the rural areas in Zimbabwe, you get a church with about 200 members. You only find one person with one Bible.
So tempted to say, you know, for just the cost of a cup of coffee, but I'm not gonna do that. But we could change that statistic. There are churches all over the globe, 200 people attending a church with one Bible. $5 will purchase a new Bible for a believer. Bible League International, historically proficient, sound, reliable. Let's get some Bibles into the hands of believers so they don't have to be sharing paragraphs until the next service. Please support Bible League International. Wretched.org/Bible.
60 to 80% of our youth are leaving the nest, flying off to university, and abandoning their faith. Wretched wants to reach these kids with the gospel by distributing 1 million copies of our evangelistic resource, What Time is Purple, on university campuses around the country. If you are a ministry or a church group, we'd love to send you a whole bunch of copies. Just contact Al Yerkes, al@wretched.org, for more information. If you want to give out What Time is Purple on your own, visit wretched.org/purple for free copies. You know, it's only with your support of Wretched that we can do things like this. If you're already supporting Wretched, thank you very much. Please know we are very grateful. And if you're not, would you consider giving a tax-deductible gift to Wretched on a monthly basis? Go to wretched.org/donate for details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. And to give out copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple, go to wretched.org/donate. /purple, and let's reach millennials together.
Books of the Bible. Song of Songs, also known as Song of Solomon, is a song about romantic love. The author uses sensuous, romantic language to describe courtship and marriage, desire and intimacy, in the context of purity and goodness, which are God's intentions for marriage. A biblical view of marital love is romantic and passionate, while being innocent and pure. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is it my birthday? My presents? This is Wretched Radio. I don't know who put that stack on my desk. I think it was me. But nevertheless, I've got a veritable treasure trove of stuff. Tony, what would you like to hear? I don't know where this stack came from.
Do I have options?
Ten reasons people do not attend ball games. It's a satirical piece. By the way, speaking of satire, if you do not believe that satire, sarcasm, is within the range of acceptable speech for the Christian, I might point you toward an Old Testament source. We see Paul employ sarcasm a lot. 2 Corinthians 9, loaded. Jesus uses sarcasm a fair amount. But how's about the Father using sarcasm? Job chapter 38. You know the story. Job has been, he's been getting whacked a lot. His three friends, air quotes, they come to encourage him, and they do a pretty rotten job of it along the way. Lessons on how to not comfort from Job's friends. But then finally, Job breaks down. What's the deal? Why are you doing this to me? And God responds with three chapters of sarcasm. Please permit me to speak this Englishly so that you can hear how sarcastic this is. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who's this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge?" What are you doing? Asking me questions. You don't know anything. Now prepare yourself like a man. I'll question you, and you're going to answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Smart guy. Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Where were you exactly in all of this operation of the universe, Job? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst forth and issued from the wombs? When I made its clouds, the clouds its garment, and thick darkness its swaddling band? When I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors? When I said, "This far you may come, but no further"? Have you commanded the morning since your days began, and caused the dawn to know its place? Have you entered the springs of the sea, Job? Or have you walked in search of the depths? Tell me if you know all this. This is mockery. This is written so that Job would learn his place. And it's written for us to learn our place. This is divine sarcasm. Have you entered the treasury of snow, Job? Have you seen the treasury of hail, which I've reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? By what way is light diffused or east wind scattered over the earth? Remember you were questioning me? Well, I got a couple for you, smart guy. Smack, 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 and it goes on mercilessly for three chapters. And what is the response? Job's response. Then Job answered the Lord and said, "Behold, I am vile. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth. Once I have spoken, but I will not answer. Yes, twice, but I will proceed no further." And then God answers. Now prepare yourself like a man. I'll question you, and you shall answer me. Would you indeed annul my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? Be careful that you don't let people get away with too much when it comes to questioning God in evangelism. So what about evil, what about evil? There's evil, and God's supposed to be all-powerful and loving. So if there's evil, then God can't exist because somebody all-powerful and all-loving would do something about this. God's response, really? This is Romans 9. Really? You're gonna question me? You mean the pot is going to question the potter? Why he was made? Really? I see. Sit down. I've got some questions for you. And I'm not sure that this is a bad idea to employ this when it comes to evangelism. I really am not. Remember, God resists the proud, gives grace to the humble. Yes, we can give a theodicy. We can explain why evil exists. God is just, and yet why evil exists. We can give that, and we should give that. But I wonder, though, if at some point this message from Job needs to be applied. Now, let's get down to the business of you asking God questions and questioning the way that he does stuff. So you don't like the fact that there's evil in the world, huh? And how does the world operate, smart guy? No, I wouldn't say that, but I'm just giving it some flourishes to demonstrate. So tell me, Mr. Wisdom, how exactly does gravity work? You got that under control? Because God does. Works every time. Every single time. Nobody's ever fooled gravity. You got that figured out? You've got the operation of the universe? You figured out all things? By the way, here's a headline. The universe might be 2 billion years younger than we thought.
So it'd be a billion 2.6.
I don't know. Max Planck Institute in Deutschland now believe that the universe is 2 billion years younger than we previously thought. Based on observations noting the universe's recent rapid expansion, the scientists think the universe is under 12 billion years, not 13.8. Scientists caution that even this new number could be off by billions of years. So their adjustment of billions of years could be off by... You got this figured out, Max? Huh? Let God know, and then you can go about the business of questioning him about evil. In fact, we're not going to get to this ballgame thing at all. Was listening to a presentation by John MacArthur on the subject of evil when he was talking about this very thing. And he, too, used Job 38 as a demonstration of divine sarcasm. But it was I got it. I can't find it, but I remember it. It was Romans 3:5. Kind of a surprising verse when it comes to this accusation that, hey, there's evil in the world. God can't exist. Ha, ha, ha. What are you going to do about that, Christian? Romans chapter 3, verse 5. But if our unrighteousness demonstrates the righteousness of God, what shall we say? Is God unjust who inflicts wrath? Certainly not. For then, how will God judge the world? That deals with the issue of evil. We aren't going to backpedal on this issue. Because as John MacArthur rightly said, and I just listened to it last night, it always traces back to God. You can't blame it on the devil, because who created the devil? You can't blame it on Adam, because who created Adam? It takes you back to the thrones of heaven. And here's really the Westminster Confession sums it up very nicely. God ordained evil, but he's not the author of it. Period. End of subject. He ordained it. God, evil doesn't escape him. And this verse actually answers it. But if our unrighteousness, if our sinfulness demonstrates his sinlessness, in other words, our evil magnifies God's goodness, what do we say? Is he unjust who inflicts wrath? You're going to blame God for something that makes him look even better? All of his attributes could not shine as brightly if there were not evil, and so he ordained it. He uses sin sinlessly. He's not the author of sin, but he ordained it, and he doesn't blush. He doesn't blush about it. Ooh, wait, whoa. God, responsible for evil? He ordained it. He doesn't commit it. He doesn't cause it, but he ordained it. For his good purposes, the cross would not be glorious if it weren't for our evil. God's mercy would never be known if it were not for our sinfulness. God's goodness could not be understood without badness. And so he created a world, and he created a world that commits evil acts without being the author of them. And he doesn't apologize for it, and neither should we. This is the accusation that the agnostic and the atheist makes. They seem to love this one. God, he doesn't blanch. He doesn't act like, oh boy, this is a tricky one. Well, let's just see. I know God's in process. He's learning stuff. That's what process theology teaches. God's going to make lemonade out of lemons. God's responding, but don't you worry. He's going to make all things work for our good. Once he realizes what's actually going on here, he's going to get on it, so don't you worry about it. Nonsense. Evil exists because God ordained it, so that he could be seen as the magnificent, glorious God who sent his Son to rescue us from our own evil ways. Why do we sing praises that Christ the Lord is risen today? It's because evil exists. Without evil, the cross wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have been necessary. We do hope that you enjoyed this presentation on 10 reasons people do not attend ball games.
Scintillating.
Until tomorrow. Focus, people, focus. Go serve your king.